That is the Ukrainian national anthem, sung by 7-year-old Amelia Anisovich. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kett, and you may have seen the viral video of Amelia in a bomb shelter singing Let It Go from Disney's Frozen. She sent safely made it across the Ukrainian border to Poland with her grandmother and more than 2 million other refugees from this war. On Sunday, in pigtails and a traditional white dress adorned with red, white, and blue flowers, she sang her national anthem to a sold-out Atlas Arena in Poland, with the stadium lights turned off, but still ablaze by 10,000 lit-up cell phones. The translation of the Ukrainian national anthem is, "Ukraine has not yet perished." Caitlin Farrell is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She went to eastern Poland to report on the war in Ukraine and returned to the U.S. just this past Saturday. Caitlin, welcome back to the Ideas Network, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you spent time with Polish families that are housing Ukrainian refugees, and I'm really curious what the experience is like for both of these sides, these two groups of people forced together by war.
Yeah, so you're right. I did have an opportunity to go inside the home of a Polish family who is housing refugees. And, you know, I spent time in a few homes. And so that was really only a brief snapshot of the thousands of Polish people who are opening their homes to Ukrainian refugees. But it was really an awesome experience to kind of be a part of their evening for the night. I at that time during my reporting trip, I was in Krakow, just outside of the city center, and it was really remarkable just to see and get to know some of the people who have really stepped up to welcome. As you said, you know, I think at this point more than 3 million people have left Ukraine. Many of them are in Poland, and many folks that I spoke to, including the family I spent time with, really want to stay in Poland because they hope the war will end soon and they want to go back to Ukraine. And so I think, you know, despite the fact that in the case of the family that I spoke to, the Polish family, you know, didn't speak Ukrainian or Russian well, and the Ukrainian family, they actually spoke Russian. They didn't speak Polish. It was really cool to see how they talked with each other using Google Translate, you know, typing on their phones and sharing messages back and forth. And they spent time cooking, talked a lot about kind of sharing each other's cuisines. And in this case, you know, they got along really well. And I think, you know, many of the Ukrainians that I spoke to, at least, were just really overwhelmed with the welcome that they had received so far when they had crossed into Poland specifically.
Yeah, Caitlin Farrell, what's the process like for refugees who cross over that eastern border from Ukraine into Poland and are looking for some sort of shelter, and the Polish families that step up to provide that? How does that all come together?
Yeah, so my understanding from when I was, you know, there in the country about a month, and the initial response really was a pure volunteer effort. I think thousands and thousands of Poles really, really stepped up to provide food, set up stations at various entry points across the country. There's several border crossings along the Polish-Ukrainian border where people could enter the country by car, by foot, and then there are train stations as well that were set up, then sort of transformed into border crossings. Some of them weren't even necessarily at the border, but in each place that I was in, I mean, you'd see people coming over into the country and immediately be met by, you know, piles of clothes that they could, coats and things that they could put on. I mean, it was quite cold, still quite cold there, like it is here. You know, food right away, hot soup, a medic station, you know, SIM cards and like data power banks and data packages for their phones.
Oh, wow.
And just recently in the second, you know, I guess, probably 2 weeks ago at this point, the Polish government rolled out a program where folks from Ukraine can register for identification numbers, and in that way they can immediately be enrolled and be eligible for health care and then become enrolled in school. And so I was at a variety of places where, you know, people were waiting in line overnight in order to get those numbers. And so So, the government has since, you know, stepped in and, you know, especially in Poland, have asked the EU and other countries for more help to sustain the support that they're giving these million. I mean, there's 2 million refugees in Poland right now, which is just a huge amount of people. So anyway, it's a really extensive, I thought, really well-organized response.
Caitlin Farrell's an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She spent about a month in eastern Poland covering the people impacted by the Russian war in Ukraine. What do you want to know about the people who are fleeing from there? And what do you want to know about the Polish people who are welcoming them in? 1-800-642-1234. You have family in Eastern Europe? And if so, what short stories would you like to share with us this morning? You can join us also via email, ideas@WPR.org. And Caitlin, as you wrote earlier this month in the Journal Sentinel, you had spent some time in Ukraine about 10 years ago, teaching English as a grad student?
Yep, that's right.
What was that experience like for you then, and how did it, how did you use that experience when you returned to the eastern border of Poland?
So, it's funny how you know, certain things in life come back around again a little bit. I went there and taught English in the western part of Ukraine, in Lviv, the Lviv area, when I was in graduate school, and It was in 2013, shortly before the Maidan protests happened, just later that year and early into 2014. And so at the time, you know, the country really captivated me. The country and its people and the relationships I built with the students I taught just really had a profound impact on me as a person, and my understanding as, you know, what it meant to be an American, and just sort of understanding a lot of the privileges we have here and things we don't really think about or worry about as much that were really on the minds of many of the students that I taught. And I ended up I completely changed my master's thesis topic to write all about the geopolitics of Ukraine. And I think, the relationships I built during that time and the understanding that I came to have about the country and its history and what's important to people there. I mean, especially I think in the western part of the country, but I think, you know, we're obviously seeing it across the whole country now. It makes really what I'm seeing now as far as the resiliency and the commitment of the Ukrainian people to fight for their country just honestly really not surprising. And I think my understanding of the country and its history really helped when I was there talking with Ukrainians who are now leaving. I think I'm really, it's a fascinating place, a culture, you know, quite different than the Midwest, but I think, you know, a lot of similarities as well. And so I left and always would tell people that if you can go visit one place, I think you should visit Ukraine. And, you know, now I hope that I'll be able to get back someday.
Caitlin Farrell from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel joining us. And you read about Dmytro Yosak, Ukrainian who's been working in Krakow, Poland to resettle refugees. He ran the Empire of Beauty Hair Salon, now runs Krakow Help to send supplies to people in need. How common is this? How successful are small grassroots organizations like this? And how, you know, how often did you see him pop up?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it's incredibly common. And I think they're everywhere. I saw a lot of whole variety of grassroots organizations popping up in Poland, in Ukraine still. Many of the folks I know who are still in the country have founded nonprofits that are trying to facilitate supplies and aid entering the country or facilitate people getting out of the country. I mean, there's groups that are working to help people get pets and horses and livestock out of Ukraine. It can be really complicated to get those animals and people over the border. But, you know, you really saw it too, like in the case of Dmytro, I actually went to visit Empire of Beauty, the salon he founded in Krakow. And I mean, he, since the war began, I mean, he's hired several, like six or so, I think, refugees who've come as stylists and nail technicians there. And so I really saw a lot of businesses trying to help in whatever way they could, including giving jobs to people who are displaced and are looking for work, which I think is really a crucial piece of aid. But you saw it walking around some of the border towns and in Krakow particularly, you really could see it all over, just different, you know, food drives, clothing drives. I mean, people, there's a huge stadium in Krakow filled. It's like basically a free Goodwill. And so it's, so yeah, it's been, it was really cool to kind of see how integrated that is.
It's fascinating. Caitlin Farrell is an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And I'd ask you, how should the U.S. support refugees in Ukraine and countries that are taking them in? Is there enough food, shelter, and mental health resources as you see it? And what more could we do? We'll take your calls and suggestions at 1-800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Saw this story just yesterday. The European Union is beginning to ask refugees from Ukraine to leave Poland and find safety someplace else. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and the UN estimates that more than 4 million people have fled Ukraine since Russia invaded, and more than half of those have made their way safely over the border to Poland. Germany and Poland are now proposing that each refugee there be given 1,000 euros to resettle. So do you have a story to share or a question to ask our guest who just returned from there? 1-800-642-1234 to join us or email ideas@WPR.org. Caitlin Farrell's an investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Caitlin, I want to ask you about the things that people carried, the images that show people fleeing Ukraine carrying a backpack or a suitcase and the choices I put myself in their shoes and wonder if I could make about what to leave behind. What did you see about the things that they carried across the border as the refugees tried to make their way to safety?
So we wrote a story kind of looking at those items and using that as a window to sort of discuss, you know, what's important to people and get to know a little bit about their story. I think, honestly, you know, we did talk to many folks who brought something specific, including I spoke with a mother of a teen boy who brought his swimsuits, specific swimsuits, and his swimming outfit, as they called it, to do water polo, which I thought was really interesting. It was, you know, she talked about how her son had been training on this competitive water polo team for years and years, gotten up and done workouts twice a day. And, you know, obviously the war stopped that, and how they didn't know where they, I saw them in Kelm, the train station in Kelm in Poland. And, you know, he didn't know where or when he could be swimming again, but really hoped to do that. And so it was really just sort of an interesting way to sort of look at how the war has interrupted, you know, normal activities in people's lives that they've spent years, you know, cultivating. A lot of people we spoke to too, I mean, really just had one bag, often like a small bag or just a backpack, and said that, you know, the most important thing that they left so fast in such a hurry that often they didn't even think about bringing a sentimental item. It was really just their documents that was the most important thing. And so, but we spoke with the woman too, who had taken her grandmother's earrings, some jewelry, reminding you know, her of family. So that was a common one too. But I was struck too by just how quickly people left and just what little actually they carried with them, to be honest.
Mona from Appleton called. She had to run, but she saw a Facebook post about a kid raising money to help animals trapped in Ukraine. Seen a few of those photos too, Caitlin. And I don't know any cat or dog lovers who would be able to leave their cats or dogs behind.
Yeah, so it's interesting that she raised that. So because there's some kind of interesting nuances there. There's actually requires more documentation, I learned, to bring your pet across the border than for bringing a human across the border, or as a human crossing the border. So, and there's some restrictions on what kinds of pets you could bring, but like birds, for example, and like horses, things like that, I think were a lot more complicated, and you have to only enter at certain crossings to bring those. But yeah, a lot of people would bring dogs. I didn't see quite as many cats, but lots of dogs at the train station. And I think But, you know, also, as she noted, I think a lot of people having to leave dogs behind. And I've also read stories about groups trying to reunite pets with their owners, where people might leave a pet somewhere and write their phone number, you know, on a tag and hope that someone can find the pet and call and help have them reunited. But yeah, you had to have paperwork for your pet. And in some cases, your pet had to be examined by a veterinarian official at the border for it to leave Ukraine, which could complicate things. But it was interesting to see that even the infrastructure too, though, built up around people supporting their pets. So at every train station I was at, and at the border crossings too, there were leashes and like dog coats and little carriers and water, bottles of water, you know, a bin for dog food and cat food. And, you know, the train station in Krakow, there was a whole like pretty extensive stand of nice, you know, new pet supplies that people could just walk up and grab whatever they needed for their dog that just volunteers were providing, not the government in that case. And so, they're members of the family, and it's interesting to kind of see that.
Caitlin Farrell, investigative reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, taking your calls this morning at 1-800-642-1234. We're Bill from Milwaukee standing by. Bill, good morning.
Good morning. Leave my dog behind, the very idea. I would sit under a bomb with my dog.
And I think some did.
I'm sure. I think the way Poland is showing such an outpouring of real human affection and kindness to the refugees, this stand that takes care of dogs, that's remarkable to me. I think America should lavish Ukraine with support in every aspect. And I hope my fellow Americans understand that we can't just walk in there and take this bully out. We'd love to, but we can't, and neither can NATO, but we cannot. What we can do is support them. What I'd like to ask the reporter is, how are the Ukraine people handling this war around them? Are there people who are still living in their houses and going on about their lives? However weird that may sound, this is a large nation, and I wonder if there are people who have the war going on around them, but it hasn't hit them yet, and are they still living their lives?
Bill, thank you. What do we, from your reporting, Caitlin, what do we know about what's happening in Ukraine and those who stayed behind? And you did have a story about folks who were actually going into Ukraine as well.
Yeah, so that is a good question. And it's kind of funny that it came up, actually, because, a couple things. There are people, at least a few weeks ago when I was focusing on this element that are going into Ukraine. I mean, there's been quite a lot of reporting about even, you know, U.S. former service members and other volunteers who are going in to help fight with the Ukrainian army. President Zelensky put out a call to invite folks to come in and help them out. But I actually do have a few friends, and one in particular who I've been in touch with still in Ukraine. She lives in a smaller village about an hour outside of Lviv in the western part of the country. And, you know, she would go with her family into the cellar. They have a cellar. And I check in with her. I try to check in with her about every day. And it's funny. There's been a few, you know, missile attacks in the western part of the country, increasingly close to the Polish border. There was one when I was there a few weeks ago on a Sunday, and then there was just one this past week. And I said, how are you doing? Like, are you in your cellar right now? And she said, we're just too tired to care about the bombs right now. We're not going into the cellar. We're too exhausted. And I think she said that there's, you know, people in her village that share that sentiment too, because even though I think we have not seen, you know, Lviv be shelled at all, you know, in the same way. The city itself hasn't seen that at all. But there are still air raid sirens that are going off often, even when there may not be a bomb that actually hits the city. And so I can imagine, right? It's just exhausting to constantly be in and out, in and out, in and out. You're not sleeping. But, you know, even in her case, I think her sister-in-law is imminently having a baby like any day now. And it was just, you know, she's just trying to go on. I mean, she's in the hospital, just sort of waiting, and just like, you know, anyone would be doing when they're waiting to have a baby. And so, yeah, I mean, obviously I can't speak to like millions of people who are still in Ukraine, but I think that there is definitely a sense of fatigue, I'm sure. I mean, just how completely exhausting that must be. And yeah, there's a level, honestly, too, I think, of like a bravery and boldness that I've experienced even when I was there before the war that I think you just really don't see often when in the U.S., to be honest,
Caitlin,
when it comes to, yeah, those challenges. So
I want to thank you so much for spending your time with us this morning and sharing what you saw over in Poland near the border. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Caitlin Farrell from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Find her next stories there. Up next is news. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.